delay, but we were waiting for somebody to come in, and I think we're not going to wait anymore. We are now going to open up a work session on House Bill 3244. And Kat, if you could please give us an update on what we have in front of us.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3244 creates the Sustainability Board and the Sustainability Board Fund and continuously appropriates money in the fund to the board. Yeah, you have in front of you the LC-2 amendments, which you did see the other day. That amendment revises language related to the duties of the board, renumbers certain provisions, and corrects language relating to depositing money received by the board into the Sustainability Board Fund.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you, Kat. And we were hoping that Representative Reed would be able to be here. And I guess not. So I will look for a motion.
Just really quick, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
I'm prepared to vote yes on House Bill 3244. The one thing I was hoping, and perhaps it's in here and I just missed it, was if the Sustainability Board, if folks can hear this who are on the board, would just be willing to come back and report to you in the next legislative session and just give an update on their activities. I think one of the things I missed was the work that they've completed. And so I'd hope in 20 months, 24 months, they'd come back and report.
Yeah, absolutely. And I have gone in front of the Sustainability Board, and I do work with members of the board on specific issues. So I appreciate you bringing that up. That's an excellent suggestion. Representative Reed, would you like to come up to the podium? Now, I don't know if you have any comments on the Dash 2 amendments.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll see if there's any questions.
Tobias Reed, State Representative, District 27. I wouldn't presume to tell you any more than we had in our previous discussion. I think the Dash 2 amendments are a good way of encouraging the board to have the freedom to have wide-ranging discussions and consider the future with the best of their abilities.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cannon.
I move the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3244.
Okay, thank you. Representative Cannon moves the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 3244. Is there any discussion? Representative Burley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to be clear here, I want to make sure Dash 2 amendments do not change at all Section 9 in the original bill, which makes the fiscal impact portion of this effective July 1, 2009. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, I believe that's correct.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Okay. So the clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byers?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
He's excused.
Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Dean Pillars?
Aye. The amendment having received the motion carries, and the amendment having received majority is adopted.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cannon.
I move House Bill 3244 as amended by the Dash 2s to the floor with a due pass as amended recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Ways and Means Committee by prior reference.
Okay, Representative Cannon moves House Bill 3244 to the floor with the as amended with the Dash 2 amendments to the floor with a due pass recommendation, and it has prior reference to the Ways and Means Committee. Is there any further discussion?
Madam Chair, just for the record, I'll be voting no on this as well, and I just want folks to know, Representative Reed, I think, you know, I've got no problem with the Sustainability Board or the sustainability principles as already in statute. My concern is simply that the fiscal portion of this is not effective for two more years, so I'll be voting no on this as well.
Okay. Thank you. So noted for the record. Any other questions or comments? Okay, well, I would like to thank Representative Reed for bringing this bill forward to the committee, and probably notice that there's half of the committee up here are co-sponsors, and we certainly appreciate the hard work you've done. This has been an issue of great importance for several years, and pleased to see that this is moving forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Clerk will call the roll, please.
Representative Smith?
Aye.
Representative Byer?
Aye.
Representative Jensen? Excused. Representative Burley?
No.
Representative Cannon?
Aye.
Representative McPherson?
Aye.
Chair Dean Pillars?
Aye. And the motion, having received the required majority, is declared passed. And Representative Reed, would you like, well, it's going to Ways and Means, so we could put a request in for you to carry it on the House floor. And I will certainly make that known to the Ways and Means Committee.
If you Thank you, Madam so Chair. I'd be pleased to.
Prefer. Okay. Okay, with that,
Madam
I will.
Chair, yeah. Just a quick question. Why is it going to Ways and Means if there's no fiscal for two more years?
Madam Chair, Representative Burley, I had the same question.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, we did not have...
Everything goes to Ways and Means.
We did not have it removed in time, and so we were told it was going down there, and we can... At this point, it will go, and I'll have a conversation down there. So,
hopefully, a quick conversation.
Right. We hope a quick conversation.
<Good luck.
laughs> And it may be coming to our subcommittee.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the case. So, I mean, it's Secretary of State, so I'm not sure if we'll send it to general government or through us. And I will we'll certainly follow up on that. But with that, I will close the work session on House Bill 3244. Thank you, Representative Reed, for letting us pull you out, and we will now open up a public hearing on House Bill 3467. Kat, can you please read a short description of the bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 3467 modifies eligibility for an expedited application process for a Water Resources Department permit for reservoirs. It requires that qualifying reservoirs have a storage capacity less than 9.2 acre feet and a dam or impoundment structure less than 10 feet high.
Thank you. And I'm going to ask first if the department can come up and give a brief overview of the existing statute and how this would change existing statute. We have Debbie Colbert and Dwight French from the Oregon Water Resources Department.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, again for the record, I'm Debbie Colbert with the Water Resources Department, and I have with me today Dwight French, who's our Water Rights and Adjudication Administrator with the Water Resources Department. And we just wanted to highlight for you kind of what is the current process for applications to store water. And as we describe in our testimony, there are currently two processes in statute for applications to store water. One of them we call the regular process, and this is essentially the process that all or most water right applications go through. It includes several steps. The department first issues an initial review of the application. We then have a public comment period. We then have a proposed final order that we issue, and then that proposed final order can be protested. And then we issue a final order, and that final order can be appealed, or there can be a request for reconsideration of that final order. Under this regular process, we would review an application to store water. We'd look and see if there's water available for the use, if it's consistent with the applicable basin program for that area, if it would cause injury to other rights, and if it's consistent with other rules of our commission, including some rules that we have that describe additional public interest standards related to impacts on endangered, threatened, and sensitive species. The second process is the process that's under consideration in House Bill 3467. And today, that process provides for an expedited review of applications to store water, but it only allows projects that either store less than 9.2 acre feet or have a dam of 10 feet or less height. Under that expedited review, the department provides for a 60-day public comment opportunity, and then we go straight to issuing a final order, which can be, applicants and others can request reconsideration of that final order. Under this expedited review, we look to see if water is available for the use, if the use would injure other rights, and if there are significant detrimental impacts to fishery resources. House Bill 3467, by changing the projects that qualify from a 9.2 acre foot or 10 foot dam to 9.2 and less than a 10 foot dam, would make more relatively small storage projects have to go through the more extended review process. And just for comparison, a new application to store water under our regular process takes between 8 to 12 months for the department to process. Under the alternate or expedited review, it's something along the lines of 5 or 6 months, which means that it's cheaper for the department to process through that alternate process, and also it is cheaper for the applicants who are applying to participate in that review process compared to the regular. So, you know, we recognize that there are some projects today that can store significant quantities of water. For example, as we mentioned in our testimony, in 2005, we had an application that went through our expedited review that stored 149,000 acre-feet, which probably was not the intent when this expedited process was created in 1995. And so given that there are a few relatively large volume reservoirs that are coming through that process today, we recognize there might be a need to create some kind of cap, but 9.2, as proposed in House Bill 3467, is a pretty restrictive cap on the reservoirs that can come through this process.
For the record, Dwight French from the Water Resource Department. Madam Chair, Representative, and members of the committee, I just wanted to add a couple points. That very large application that came in 2005, unfortunately, it's still pending. The department and ODFW and the applicant have been balled up in discussions about if and how this thing should go through. And one of the reasons we're balled up is because there's no initial review, there's no public notice. You go right to final order, and so you don't have this convenient sometimes back and forth period that you do have during the regular reservoir process that Debbie described. One more point that I want to make about House Bill 3467. One of the benefits of getting a permit through the alternate reservoir process is that most permit holders under that process can file their own proof of claim at the end of their development period. They don't have to hire a certified water right examiner. That's a benefit for the permit holder because they don't have to go to that additional expense. It's also a benefit for the Water Resource Department because the material submitted by the permit holder is a brief by design, and it doesn't take much for the Water Resources Department to review that. That's important to me because I'm trying to help the department make some progress on the certificate backlog. And so applications or these type of permits that we can move through the review of the certificate, you know, quickly is positive, and I like that feature of the alternate process.
Madam Chair.
Representative Burley.
Thank you. Debbie, I thought I heard you say that the 9.2 acre feet in 3467 is overly restrictive or some qualified comment like that. Did I hear that correctly?
Madam Chair, Representative, 9.2 acre feet is, you know, if you consider that a lot of irrigation rights can take 3 acre feet per acre, that's about three acres of irrigation in a 9.2 acre foot storage facility. So if that helps, that's relatively small quantity of water. And so while we acknowledge that some of these larger applications, it might make sense to send them through the regular process, just is 9.2 the appropriate limitation under this alternate review process?
Follow up. I mean, the original language says 9.2 acre feet or a dam 10 feet or higher. So what you're suggesting is that the 9.2 acre feet has always been rather restrictive. But we're making this even more restrictive by saying 9.2 and a dam that's over 10 feet. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative, today, if the dam is 5 feet in height, there is no limitation on the volume of water that can be stored. So it's an or statement. Under House Bill 3467, it would be an and. So not only would it have to have a dam of less than 10 feet, it would also only be allowed to store up to 9.2 acre feet.
Okay. So one last follow-up. Mm-hmm. So then should we, as we're considering this bill, be considering increasing that acre footage then to something that's a little more reasonable? And if so, what would that number be? I'm going to put you on the spot.
Madam Chair, Representative, I think the department agrees that it might make sense to have an upper cap to the total volume of the storage, and we've had some early discussions with the bill proponents about something along the lines of 100 acre foot limitation, so that the statute would read something along the lines of 9.2 acre feet or a dam of less than 10 feet up to a maximum of 100 acre foot total volume.
Madam Chair.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you. Thank you, Debbie. How did the 9.2 acre feet enter the statute in the first place? How is that number? A 10-foot height you can sort of understand because it's a round number, but 9.2 suggests there was some thought behind it.
Madam Chair, Representative, and Dwight, if you have anything to add, I'd appreciate it. But my understanding is that in 1995, when they were creating this expedited process, they chose those two standards because they mirrored our dam safety standards. So today, dam safety requirements are triggered if you have a dam that stores 9.2 acre feet or has a dam impoundment or height of more than 10 feet.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I would just add that this 9.2 number, kind of a strange number, equals right at 3 million gallons. So that if you did the conversion from gallons to acre feet, you would get from 3 million to 9.2.
I should be carrying my conversion card.
Did everyone bring their conversion card today? So you might need it.
Yeah, a follow-up question.
Follow-up.
Does the current statute create an incentive to build dams that are sort of unnecessarily low in height in order to fall within? I mean, if you want a large water storage and you want the expedited process, it appears to me you might have some incentive to try to come under that 10-foot height in order to follow the expedited process. Do you see water users, developers sort of taking that look at things?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in my looking at the many applications that are filed under this process, you can see in the either the acre foot or the dam height a whole bunch of applications right at the limit but not greater. So I'm sure that folks choose how can I go under the alternate process but still meet it by either sizing the dam or the acre feet to match. So I'm sure there is some of that, and the fees are less for the alternate process, so that's an incentive also, as well as I mentioned earlier, not having to hire a certified water right examiner after you've developed your reservoir. That's also an incentive.
Madam Chair.
Follow-up.
Do we mean to encourage that kind of thinking, or are there consequences and perhaps unintended consequences of short dams that have large storage behind them? Unnecessarily short dams. I mean, I guess that's where I'm headed with this.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, to make a real broad general statement, storage, there are some benefits in our statutes and rules and policies that that give some preference to storage over applications to just use live flow, either out of the ground or the stream. And so I think there might be some of you know, some of that policy. I wasn't involved in drafting the bill, but I think you get some of, there are some advantages or some preferences for storing water.
Maybe I can clarify, because the incentive it seems to create is to have a short dam, and I'm wondering if there, if we intend to do that, if given sort of the universe of possible dams storing the same amount of water, a shorter one, but one that then backs up farther, is more desirable than a taller one that has less backup. I mean, that's a simplistic way of looking at it, but is this, would there ever be sort of public interested reasons for wanting to encourage people to make their dams under 10 feet?
Well, Madam Chair, members of the committee, there are some, naturally when you're storing a lot of water, there could be some danger to downstream landowners, and our dam safety statutes also mirror the language in the current statute that has the or in it. And but generally speaking, a lower dam, there is less opportunity for failure than a higher dam. But I'd really have to, kind of talking out of my league, we would need to talk to some dam safety experts that we have at the Water Resources Department if you wanted to talk about those kind of consequences.
Madam Chair.
Representative McPherson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Colbert, Mr. Dwight, I'll let you choose who responds. I'm trying to understand why there's a height element at all. I mean, what I see in the summary of the criteria that are evaluated, and if it's in the regular process, they seem to be matters that relate to volume rather than really what difference does it make what the height of the dam is as opposed to the volume of water that's being stored.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I do know that in 1995 the effort was to create an alternate process, a simplified process, for reservoirs that did not require a dam safety plans and specifications or that additional overview that the department requires and provides for those projects that meet both criteria. So if you had, if the current law were to be changed so that you allowed up to 50 acre feet and any size dam, then you could go through the alternate process, but there wouldn't be this back and forth opportunity between us and the applicant on issues relating to dam safety. And the current alternate process, you really can't go through it and have a problem with the dam safety statutes. So it's meant for projects that aren't caught in the dam safety loop. I hope that is helpful.
I think it is. Can I follow up just to clarify? So I think what I'm hearing is that it's not just issues of impact on the water course and on other water rights and sort of water-related issues, that part of the permitting process is safety related to the construction of the dam itself and a structure that's low enough to be within the 10 feet limit, then wouldn't raise those issues.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that you're right on that point, yes.
Okay, and if I could follow up again, in the absence of the chair, I'm just going to leap ahead.
With my permission.
Well. it does seem as though having an and standard, whether the quantity is 9.2 acre feet and 10 feet in height are the right levels or not, that having an and would seem to be the more logical kind of solution, because then you're getting at both the dam safety issue of height and you're getting at the impact on the total volume of water that's being diverted.
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, I was waiting for a question. I apologize, so I didn't.
The question is, wouldn't it make sense to have an and standard, whether or not the 9.2 acre feet and the 10 feet in height is correct? It isn't the right sort of policy choice if we have these two elements of regulation that need to be addressed in the regular
process, which is safety as a function of the height of the dam and the impact on water volume usage, it would seem like having an and is more logical. Maybe one or both of those need to be higher.
Well, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, the dam safety requirements are an or, and that's what in 1995 that we were trying to create the alternate process for applications that did not have to did not need to be involved in the dam safety review. And I understand your point, and a smaller sized reservoir generally would present generally safer conditions. What our as Debbie pointed out in our testimony iterates is that there would be impacts to applicants and the department in moving applications into the regular, more time consuming process than the alternate, or as some people call it, the expedited process.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple of questions. That helped me a little bit here. What specifically is the safe, and I realize we're not dealing with that in this statute, but what specifically is the safety issues as far as dams are concerned?
Oh, well, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, I'll try and answer. I'm not the dam safety expert for the department, and we do have a couple of engineers on staff that handle that. But generally speaking, reservoirs that are certain sizes of reservoirs and how the dam is constructed and where it is located in respect to either downstream homeowners or downstream highways, for example, is or can be an issue. And if your reservoir is large enough, if it meets both criteria, and you have to, and you're caught in the dam safety web, so to speak, then the department does periodic safety inspections of your dam to make sure that it's in good shape and we're not seeing any cracks or slumping or large amounts of growth, that kind of thing.
Representative Jones, if I could. Just kind of to cut to the quick here, fundamentally, dam safety is not anything particularly related to safety as far as water is concerned, as far as the department is concerned, how much water. It doesn't have to do with protecting the other landowners as far as the amount of water they have. It has to do with what we all would call safety issues. That is, these structures, by their very nature, may be subject to failure. Anytime you put a dam in, and we're worried about whether we're going to have the loss of human life or the loss of human property when and if one of these facilities fails.
Yeah. Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, that is correct.
Without going in, Mr. Chair, without going into the physics of it, as far as water flow is concerned, I assume then that the issue as far as the dam height you're going to have, if you've got a dam that's 100 feet high, and it goes out, you have substantially more potential for damage or for injury, property and or person downstream from wherever that facility is. The same way, the more water you have backed up, the more potential you have, because the more, again, without going into the physics of it, the more force that there may be there to cause problems downstream. Typically, correct me if I'm wrong, but typically most of these reservoirs are the height of the dam and or shallowness of the is dependent upon the topography where the facility is going to be located, isn't it?
Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, that all of your statements are correct, yes.
Typically, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry. Typically, most people don't want to put more of their land underwater in a dam than they absolutely have to. They'd either like to graze it or plow it or do something else with it, which is the purpose of the storage of the water to begin with.
Well, Mr. Vice Chair, members of the committee, generally, that is correct.
Okay.
Any other questions for this panel? We have some other witnesses to call up as well. Go ahead, Representative Burley.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. I guess I'd like to kind of go back to the start here, if I may. We just looked up 537,400 here, which is the dam safety, and it's quite clear that, you know, it says 9.2 acre feet or a dam less than 10 feet, which is identical to what's here under 537,409. I'm asking myself the question again, what is it under, aside from the expedited process, I understand that, but when we go through this process of the reservoirs of permitting these things, what exactly is it we're trying to address? I mean, is it, you know, I can appreciate the fish and wildlife, but help me understand, what's the difference between 9 acre feet or 100 acre feet and how that affects all of these things that we're trying to deal with in this permitting process? Because I guess I'm trying to... Also get to the question, if we're going to change this here under this section, would we not want to be considering changing it under 537,400 necessarily?
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think fundamentally when they created this expedited process in 1995, they were trying to create a route that was faster and cheaper for our applicants to get these permits to store water. And by mirroring the triggers used in dam safety, they were eliminating one of the requirements. So if you didn't trigger all those requirements, it made sense to go down this expedited route. But they did include opportunities for comment, similar to a regular process, and they built in, by statute, a role for ODFW to provide input on the fisheries issues. So I think fundamentally it was mirroring the dam safety just because that was, you know, a way of ensuring that it would be the kinds of projects that wouldn't have a lot of requirements.
Okay. One last question, Mr. Vice Chair. Thank you. That's very helpful, Debbie. Thank you. Now, so let me then kind of rephrase this question. Given that, given mirroring the dam safety, as you said, and if it doesn't meet that threshold, then we expedite, and we have in this section provisions for ODFW to weigh in and the public to weigh in, what's the problem? Why are we changing this?
Mr. Chair, Representative, this is not a bill that was introduced by the department. We think that, in fact, and as our testimony says, that the process is working. We are able to process these quickly. They generally get conditions from ODFW that are identical to the ones that ODFW recommends on our regular reservoir applications. So I don't think that we would characterize there as being a problem, but we do recognize that some, including the proponents of the bill, have concerns about the volume of projects that have gone through this expedited review.
Representative Burley, we're going to hear next from a couple of folks who are supporting the bill, so perhaps if there are no further questions, I'll bring them up.
Thank you very much.
Kimberly Priestley and Doug Myers, would you please come to the witness stand?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Doug Myers, representing Water Watch, and with me is Kimberly Priestley of Water Watch, the chair and the former chair of this committee will recognize is the brains of the outfit, and therefore able to answer most of your questions. I was on the original Ponds bill work group some 12 years ago now, and it was formed by Representative Chuck Norris, as a response to farmers who, with runoff from their hills, had natural ponds formed, and they didn't want to go through the regular lengthy dam thing to get a permit to store that water. They just wanted to leave it there, and so we created this special process. I have to say it was, you might notice a few of my lobby colleagues flinching at the mention of these ponds bills, because it was the damnedest and most thing I've ever been through. Chuck Norris would simply, this is when the Blazers were a very good team. They would, in March and April, 12 years ago, he would literally lock us in a room and say, I'll be back in 2 hours, see what you can do. And he would be back in 2 hours, say, how are you guys doing? And through that process, we got through this and came up with this ponds bill. So this is why a lot of us are very reluctant to reopen this, even though my client is reopening it. So with that, I'll turn it over to Kimberly. Thank you.
Okay. Vice Chair Cannon, members of the committee, my name is Kimberly Priestley. I'm the Assistant Director of Water Watch of Oregon. For the record, Water Watch is a nonprofit river conservation group. We have members across the state who care deeply about our rivers and the water laws and policies that protect them. We are here today to testify in support of House Bill 3467. We've already heard from the department what this bill will do. I will speak a little as to why it is needed. As Doug said, the original bill that established the alternative reservoir process passed in 1995, and this was part of a whole package of bills dealing with small ponds. And as he said, you know, the discussions at this time were around these small ponds, like livestock ponds, other incidental ponds. The discussions were not focused on large irrigation ponds or anything of that sort. And the intention behind this was to allow these small ponds that would likely pose little or no public interest concerns to go through an expedited process. And that was the original intent behind this bill. And I have attached a chart that the department actually was kind enough to compile for us that shows the number of alternative reservoir applications filed in 2005 and 2006. And you'll see that out of 222 applications filed, only 27 of them were over 9.2 acre feet. While the vast majority of these applications are in fact under 9.2 acre feet, you do see that there are some, ranging from 20 to 40 to 50 to 100 to 400 to 149,000 acre feet are in fact going under this expedited process. And we feel strongly that these larger applications really were not intended by the drafters of the 95 law. And the reason that this loophole provided by the existing statute that allows the limited review of these larger reservoir projects, the reason it's problematic, actually there's two reasons. One, it limits the Water Resources Department's ability to consider the normal range, which is a pretty wide range of public interest factors that it could otherwise apply to a regular reservoir application. These include, but are not limited to, compliance with basin plans, water availability, compliance with all rules of the commission, including the Division 33 sensitive stock rules, injury, water use efficiency, avoidance of waste, threatened endangered species, water quality, fish or wildlife, recreation, economic development, and so on and so forth. In contrast, as you heard from the department, the streamline project limits the department's review to only three factors, and that is injury, significant detrimental impact to existing fishery resources, and whether water is available. And while these three factors, I think, are sufficient in the case of small ponds, under 9.2 acre feet, for the larger reservoir applications, they really just do not allow the state to adequately analyze what is being proposed. I mean, they cannot look at water quality. They cannot look at wildlife. They cannot look at fishery resources that aren't existing fishery resources. In other words, you know, on a stream, say, where people are putting a lot of time and money into restoring a fishery, that would not necessarily fall under this review. So that is of great concern to us. And the second reason that we think this is problematic is that it greatly limits public participation in the permitting process. Water is a public resource, and we feel very strongly that the public should be able to participate fully in the allocation decisions of this resource. And where large reservoirs are concerned, this is especially important. And as we heard from the department, the expedited process only allows for public comment. Once you file a public comment, the department issues its final order. And there is an opportunity to, you can file a petition for reconsideration, but really the next step is probably circuit court. And when you go to circuit court, the review is actually quite limited. And as far as the fish standard, you would be limited to, you know, the detrimental, significant detrimental impact to fish. But to contrast that with a regular permitting process, you have a comment period and then a protest period, and the protest, either there's room to negotiate, you know, back and forth with the applicant and the department, or it goes to contested case hearing. And that process allows for the full vetting of all the facts, and it allows for a thorough review of all the different factors that go into the decision. So it's a much more, I would say, informed decision-making process. So in conclusion, those are the two primary problems that we're trying to address. So in conclusion, we would urge the committee to support and recommend passage of House Bill 3467. We feel that this change would close a loophole that's inconsistent with the original purpose and intent of the pond bill. And as I mentioned earlier, it actually would affect a pretty small number of applicants. Roughly 10% of the applicants are, you know, 12 to 13 applicants per year. And if there are any questions, I would be happy to answer them.
Great. Thank you very much for your testimony. Are there questions? Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Kimberly, I didn't hear any testimony from the department that there were problems, that they've encountered problems with this. But what's your official position on water storage?
Water Watch is not opposed to storage as long as it is done in an environmentally responsible way. We have never taken a position against storage. And again, we're not trying to go after what we see as, you know, the type of storage that was intended by this bill. You know, the small ponds, you know, the 90% of the alternative reservoir applications would still go through this streamlined process, and it works for them. All we are trying to do is have the larger reservoirs go through a more thorough analysis. It's not that we're trying to stop storage. And I apologize, I meant to say Vice Chair Cannon.
That's all right.
Well, you know, I'm sorry. It does seem to me we're trying to fix something where there, you know, I don't think you made a case where there is a problem, and I'm not sure why we want to, you know, pass a law to create a problem.
Vice Chair Cannon, Representative Jensen, members of the committee, it's true we did not hear from the department that there is a problem. I think they were speaking more to that the processing is working. It's quick and fast processing. People are getting, for the most part, people are getting their permits. But I think from the public standpoint, there is a problem in that there's not necessarily a thorough review of these applications. And I think, you know, the example of 149,000 acre foot reservoir. It is an example, you know, it is the extreme, but I think that provides a good example because as I understand it, ODF&W was fairly limited in the type of review it could give this application. So that's problematic in and of itself. And then we also heard from the department that it, just the process, aside from the public interest factors, just the process did not, is not allowing for a good back and forth as far as negotiations, you know, really trying to analyze this application. So I think, I guess from our point of view, there are public interest concerns with these larger applications that we think just need a full vetting, you know, whether it's water quality, wildlife.
Representative Jensen?
Follow up. You're saying from your point of view there is a problem. My question was, you haven't brought us a problem other than the fact that from your point of view there is a problem.
Vice Chair Cannon, Representative Jensen, members of the committee, I will try and clarify. I don't have a specific example for you, but I can think of an example. Say you have a stream that does not have an in-stream water right on it protecting fishery resources, so therefore there would be no injury issue. It's a stream that currently, you know, I don't know, say the Middle Deschutes, that currently doesn't have anadromous fish but will when there's passage at Pelton and Round Butte. The existing fishery standard would not necessarily apply. And say there's water available 1 month of the year, that would likely be approved under the expedited review process, but under the more thorough review, it might also be approved, but you would at least look at all the factors and see if there were more conditions that could be put on it, say, to protect fisheries, you know, anadromous fish that might be coming into the system.
Follow-up?
Last follow-up, yes, Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can appreciate that the world changes, and it's you know, I guess a fact of nature and man both being here. But I'm wondering why we wouldn't, you know, rather than speculate on a hypothetical hearing, why we wouldn't wait until such types of things actually begin to appear before we, you know, address this. Instead, we're going to spend taxpayer money, landowner money, for a workload in a department that is currently hard-pressed to do the things that I think you and I both would agree sometimes may be detrimental. So that's where my, you know, major heartburn, I guess, comes with the concept and idea here. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
It's not me anymore. Madam Chair. Question.
Yes, Representative Cannon.
Thank
and
you.
Representative Burley.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Representative Jensen, although I didn't.
Kimberly, I'm looking at this one, an admittedly extreme example, but if I understand this correctly, this is a application for 149,000 acre feet on a 10-foot dam, 10-foot or less dam. So, you know, you do some rough math there, and correct me if I'm wrong, but we're talking about a 14 or 15,000 acre dam in terms of the amount of land, at least, that it covers, or 23 square miles.
Mm-hmm.
Is it your impression that this law was intended to expedite the process for a 23 square mile? I mean, this would be visible from on a pretty large scale map.
Mm-hmm.
What are the considerations? I mean, what worries you about a 23 square mile water impoundment that has not undergone the full screening process in statute?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Cannon, members of the committee, I think that's a even though this is an extreme, it's actually a great question. I mean, this is an application where ODF&W's review, as I understand it, was limited to the significant impacts on existing fishery resources. And because there was water available 1 month of the year, my understanding is that their review basically was limited to things such as screening, whereas an overall project review on, say, an application this large would look at the overall effect on the stream system, what folks are doing with that water. I think you would, not just ODF&W, but the department, DEQ, would weigh in on water quality issues. There would probably, I would imagine, this one was down in the Klamath Basin, there might be wildlife impacts that need to be accounted for. There are other water availability concerns beyond the initial water availability sort of cutoff threshold, because oftentimes the at least our observance of the department's permitting on storage is, if, you know, in a 6 month storage period there's water available 1 month, oftentimes these applications actually are issued for longer than that 1 month. So I think there would be ramifications beyond the 1 month where water is presumably available.
Did you have a follow-up?
Thank you.
Follow-up?
Go ahead.
Done. Thank you, Madam Chair. Kimberly, when was the expedited process in 537409 first enacted?
In 1995.
Oh. This chart you gave us, does this, the 222 total, is that all since this was first enacted in 1995?
No, Chair Dingfelder, Representative Burley, members of the commission. This is just a two-year window, and it's my understanding that this is fairly representative. But I would defer to the department on that. I could follow up as well.
This chart is from the department.
Yeah.
Well, I understand. Thank you. And follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
So what we've done is we've taken out of,
says for years,
12 years or so, we've taken a snapshot of 2 out of the 12 years. I'd be curious to see how many of these anomalies we've had over the course since this was first enacted. I would also agree with you that the 149,000 and change acre feet is a bit of an anomaly, but I think we need to be cautious not knowing the details. So, for example, did this occur on the west side or the east side? You know, what type of topography is it? What is this, a dry gulch that filled in behind due to a one-time storm event? So it's kind of hard just based on this to tell exactly what's going on. Also, Madam Chair, if I may,
follow up.
Of these alternative reservoirs, not just in this table, but all of them since 1995, are these on private lands or public lands or a mix of that or mostly one or the other?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Burley, I actually don't have the information on whether they're on private or public lands. I would think they would be largely private. Again, the original bill, the passage of the original bill was sort of based at these ponds that people were using for livestock and other incidental purposes on their property. As far as the questions on the larger application, that was an application down in the Klamath Basin. I can get the specifics of that to you. But I would like to add that that one application is not, you know, the only focus of our concern. I think some of these other larger ones that you're seeing, that we're seeing on this list of, say, you know, anything, anywhere, depending on the basin, you know, from 50 to 400 could have significant impacts. And I would be happy to provide you with specifics on a range if that would be helpful.
A couple more?
Yeah, follow up.
Thank you. Well, the other thing, when I talk about the site-specific conditions of these, you know, you use the example of the Middle Deschutes, and I don't think anybody's planning on putting a 10-foot dam in the Middle Deschutes in our near future. But I would suspect, and based a lot on what Mr. Myers testified, that, and I may well be wrong, I mean, this is not my forte necessarily, but I would suspect a lot of these things are on the east side where you're in some pretty dry climates, and a lot of this stuff are probably dry gullies that fill in when you've got some storm events. So we're not talking about, you know, running streams that have fish in them. We're talking about dry gullies that fill in, and they use them for stock ponds. So I'd be kind of curious if perhaps somebody could provide us a little better insight as to the mix of that. And then one last question, Madam Chair, and I promise I'll be the last one. Kimberly, in your testimony, you commented that the existing expedited review process greatly limits public participation in the permitting process. And if I'm not mistaken, according to the existing statute, there are 60 days available for the public to submit detailed, legally obtained information in writing, requesting the department to do some things. And, you know, just for note, under the National Environmental Policy Act that the federal government uses, environmental assessments give 30-day comment periods, and environmental impact statements 60 or maybe 90. So I'm curious, why is 60 days insufficient?
Chair Dingfelder, Representative Burley, members of the committee, it's not the length of time that I was speaking to that is insufficient. I was contrasting it to the regular permitting process, which allows for a 30-day comment period and then a 45-day, importantly, a 45-day protest period. The protest is what grants a third-party legal standing to continue on to challenge, make their voice heard and to participate in any contested case hearings. With the alternative reservoir process, it is a 60-day comment period, but the department doesn't have to do anything with those comments. They don't need to reply. I'm sure that they consider them, but it does not grant the commenter legal standing. And then what the department does is it just, it issues its final order, and then there are appeal processes from there. But again, as I touched on briefly, the appeal of a final order is a much more limited appeal and doesn't vet the facts the same way that a contested case would. And just to add to that, it's been our experience that when a protest is involved, the department can correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that in the last 2 years, every protest has been resolved via negotiation, since you end up with a permit that has more protective conditions of use that allow the water user to go forward with their project, but protects the wide variety of public interest factors that can be raised through the wider process.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Any other questions? Okay, and I apologize that I had to go off to another committee and testify on one of my bills, but Kimberly, I have a question for you, because the department mentioned that they mentioned the idea of a cap, and they talked about adding some language, possibly, a maximum of 100 acres or something. Do you have any comments on that or thoughts on that, or would that address concerns that you've raised here today?
Yes, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. WaterWatch is open to discussing changing the cap. I mean, if you look at this, at the list that I've attached to our testimony, even if the cap, based on this two-year window, but this is the information I have, but even based on that, if you stopped it, say, at 20, that would cut it in half. If you put the cap at 50, that would reduce the number that would have to go through the regular permitting process to one quarter. So I think there is some room for discussion, and we would be happy to, talk with the department and whoever else.
Okay, thank you.
So do we have a cap, Madam Chair, on the amount of time we spend in a work group on this?
There will not be a work group. We are maxed out on the number of work groups we have in this committee already.
Thank you, Ms. Chair.
Thank you.
Much to the chagrin, I'm sure, of many of the committee members who hasn't chaired one yet. Okay, next I will call up Katie Fast from the Farm Bureau. Is Katie here? And actually, Scott Ashcombe, why don't you both come up together, since, you guys talked about this a long time. It's good. Yes, thank you. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Chair Dingfelder, members of the committee. For the record, Katie Fast with Oregon Farm Bureau Federation, and thank you for the opportunity to testify today on 3467. It's very important for agriculture and Oregonians to have the ability to capture water when it's available, to be able to put it to beneficial use at later times of the year. And from Farm Bureau's perspective, the current process is working well. We oppose the current restrictions that are in place in 3465 to narrow this this program to smaller projects. And if the large projects, as we've heard with the example in Klamath Falls, if that's the concern of the proponents, you know, we're willing to have a conversation with them regarding a volume restriction. I don't know if, from hearing the previous testimony, if we'll be in agreement, though, on what that volume restriction could be. And to respond to some of Representative Burley's questions, you know, I think this is being used mainly on the east side. However, I have some members here on the west side who have utilized the project or are interested in doing so on some intermittent non-fish-bearing streams here on the west side that they see some potential for small storage projects. And with that, I'd be happy to answer some questions.
Why don't we have Scott go first and then see if there's any questions for either of you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Scott Ashgren with the Oregon Agricultural Alliance. Just as our perspective, in particular my own perspective, is as a person who has filed a number of reservoir applications. The first time I filed a reservoir, an expedited reservoir application, was also the last time I filed one, and the last time I ever will file one. I will always recommend that people file a regular reservoir application and go through the review process. The department does a fine job of reviewing these, by the way. View it, please, as there being two broad categories of reservoir applications. You have reservoir applications per se, which are divided into what I call, although Dwight French does not, he uses different terminology, but I call them exempt reservoirs and non-exempt reservoirs. It is that.
Bad choice of words.
Don't go there. No,
you know, as a lobbyist, that's the way I think this is a very elegant exemption. That's the way a lobbyist would think about it. But the basis of the distinction between the exempt reservoir and the non-exempt reservoir is only dam safety. A non-exempt reservoir has to pay the $350 annual fee for the dam safety inspection program, and a non an exempt reservoir is one which has which stores less than 9.2 acre feet of water, or has a spillway that doesn't exceed 10 feet in height. So you have those. Now, of the exempt reservoirs, you have an expedited reservoir application process, and then you have a regular reservoir application process. I always recommend file the regular reservoir application process. Why is this? Well, the expedited reservoir application, when the department sends the reservoir application off for review to all of the state agencies, DEQ gets a copy, Fish and Wildlife gets a copy, all of the interested agencies get a copy, and then the agencies, including the Fish and Wildlife Department, send back their response to their review of the expedited reservoir application. Under the expedited reservoir application process, the applicant is not given the opportunity to interact with the Fish and Wildlife Department and question their recommendations. Whereas in the regular reservoir application process, the applicant is given the opportunity to interact with the Fish and Wildlife Department and question their application, their recommendations. So that's the difference. When you replace the word "or" in the bill in line 9 with the word "and," it seems to me that really what you're doing is eliminating what I see to be a flaw
in the expedited reservoir application process, and that is the fact that the applicant doesn't have an opportunity to interact with Fish and Wildlife and question their recommendations. I've seen some very, very strange recommendations come in from the Fish and Wildlife Department on expedited reservoir applications. So, just with that perspective, and let me also say with regard to the dam safety issue, since it gave rise to such interesting conversation, there was an attorney general's opinion in about 1983, 1984, that was based on the fact that somebody had a reservoir. The spillway was relatively small. I'm just taking this from the case, as I recall. It's a long time ago. But apparently a visitor to the farm property, their kid went out, got a boat, and went out on the reservoir and went over the spillway and was hurt. So the parents of the child brought suit because they said that the Water Resource Department was responsible in some respect because it didn't require notification that there was a spillway here and, you know, signage and so forth. So really, the 1995 bill imported the language from the case law into statute, and that's how we came that. But basically, if you want to do this, Bill, that's fine. I think it really is, in a way, counterproductive because I think the expedited reservoir application process shortchange Fish and Wildlife now.
Okay. Thank you for your comments on that. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Next we have up Richard Kosasan. And then if there's anybody else that would like to come up and testify that might not have signed up, I think we'll call the department up afterwards for some questions. Further questions.
Thank you,
Richard.
Madam Chair. Richard Kosasan with Water for Life. In essence, we're not too enamored with the proposal. We wholeheartedly agree with Water Watch that we should not form a work group on this bill.
I think that's the first that you guys have been in absolute agreement.
Well, in 93, we started this debate in terms of ponds. And in 93, House Bill 2153 was enacted, which provided an exemption for certain ponds constructed prior, I believe the date was July 1, 1993. In 95, we revisited this. There was a series of really three major, quote, ponds-related bills. The current statute provided in 537-409, providing for the expedited process for ponds, was established with the passage of House Bill 2376 in 95. That was a result of, as previously referred to, many, 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 many work groups. And I thought there was basically general consensus at that time. If the concern is with a pending application, I would just remind everyone that's a pending application. If we have an application for 149,000 acre feet of water, it's pending for a reason. But the criteria in terms of what the department looks at in small ponds is well delineated. It would be on page 2 of the bill, starting really lines 3, 4, 5, 6, and following 7, 8, and 9. But in terms of a review of what we have described as small ponds over the years, we look at water availability, detrimental impacts to fishery resources, potential injury to existing rights. And basically, one of the reasons the legislation was put together in 95 was to encourage or provide an incentive for storage and for the development of small ponds. What we have, I think, here is we're taking a step back and we provide some hurdles for storage and for the development of ponds. We provide incentives in terms of fees, in terms of provisions not requiring maps prepared by a certified water right examiner, and basically an expedited system, but again, that expedited system provides public input. With that, I would encourage also some considerations given to the provisions contained on page 2, lines 19, and specifically line 24, with the map required now to be expanded to include the dimensions of the reservoir and of adjacent structures if applicable. So again, we're adding cost, providing a disincentive for the development of such ponds when we should be, I think, going the other way. With that, I would close, and I'd be happy to try to answer any questions. But in essence, we believe that the legislation really is not necessary.
Thank you, Richard. Question I have for you, and unfortunately I was out for part of this discussion, but since you were here, and I'm assuming because you've been around for a long time, you were here in 93 when that...
That was my first session.
Yeah. That you were here for this. It's a lot of chuckling coming from the back of the room. The House bill that was originally passed in 1993, it sounds like the intent was small ponds, and by looking at, you know, the example that Water Watch brought forward, the 149,000 acre feet, I mean, I wouldn't consider that a small pond, would you?
I would not consider that a small pond, Madam Chair, but I believe that the existing statutory framework provides the department the flexibility to avoid permitting that. So, as referred to earlier, that was an application filed in 2005, and 2 years later, it's not yet approved, to my knowledge.
And then what would you consider acreage-wise a small pond?
I think it depends entirely on the topography. If you would go to a lot of areas east of the Cascades, Columbia Basin, for example, when we have a relatively level ground, but you have small indentations, you could build an impoundment that would be 2 feet tall, and it could have the capability of impounding a good amount of water, 20, 30, 40, 50 acre feet or more. But in terms of a potential impact, relatively none. So I think I would look at more the location and the topography than I would the size or the volume capacity.
And then finally, there was a brief discussion about a cap to try to avoid this type of, I don't want to say loophole, but you could say loophole from happening. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Would it not please the chair to say 148,000 acre feet?
You're correct. That would not please
that's
the chair
a little
to say
too
that.
High.
135,000.
We would be happy to talk and discuss the issue with Water Watch as well as the department. But a cap might be prudent in terms of long-term future viability, or it might, another option would be simply to provide the department some flexibility to say if there are extenuating certain circumstances over a certain cap, they could direct the applicant to go through the regular permitting process. And that might just take care of it with ease.
Thank you. Any other questions for Richard? Representative Burling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Richard, I'll ask the same question of the department because I believe the chair is going to bring them back up to kind of close up a little bit. But on page 2 of the bill, the existing statute says on line 7 through 9, within 180 days after the department, yada, 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 the department shall issue a final order granting or denying the permit or granting the permit with conditions. So is it conceivable that with something like 149,000 plus acre feet, they could deny the permit for whatever reason, and then the applicant would have to go through the formal, more lengthy process to get that permit? Is that accurate?
That is the way I would construe the process. And again, I think the department probably could respond far better than I, but if that application was filed in 2005, there had to be some extenuating circumstances for nearly 2 years later, it's not yet approved.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Madam.
Thank you. Any other questions, Representative Jensen?
Strike me that it must have been slightly over 2 years at this particular date.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I would like to ask the department to come back up and maybe they can answer that question as well. Because I was curious about that. If they have, if you can within 180 days as listed in existing statute, I guess it begs the question why this application is still pending if it's been 2 years. And then I think we have some other questions as well.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, that particular application is has been put on hold a couple of different times by the applicant. So, we've had some tours of the property. We had of the property in question. We got different agency, local and Salem experts together, went down, took a tour. So that took some time. I forget when it last came on hold, off of hold. There's been multiple holds by the applicant, but the ball is back in our court to get a final order issued one way or another.
Okay, well, that's somewhat disturbing because I would think that would cost the agency more money if you have to go through this one process, review it, then deny it, and then you're basically putting it into another category and starting over again. I don't know if you have any thoughts on that.
Well, Madam Chair and members of the committee, you're correct. These large applications this one was an alternate application for a large amount of water. Department wants to make a good decision with input from Department of Fish and Wildlife. We did receive input from many other federal fish agencies, and the state of California also submitted comments, and it's just been awkward to work through. And I think I'm not sure. It's not really fair, I don't think, for me to, if you don't mind, Madam Chair, for me to speculate on how we might process it. The applicant would generally be the first folks to hear from the department what our decision will be.
Sure, that quite answers the question, but it just seems to me that it would be clearer to both for the department and the applicant for them to know, instead of going through one process and then saying, you know, this isn't going to work, and then, you know, I would think an applicant will want certainty either way. That's what's disturbing about,
Madam
about
Chair,
this, them being able to go through the alternative review.
Madam Chair, I agree with you. I should point out that initially, they filed a regular application through the regular process, and then they discovered that because their dam height was under 10 feet, they qualified for the alternate process. They withdrew their application, got about a $39,000 refund back, and then filed about a couple of hundred dollars for the same quantity of water under the alternate process. So we've been down the other process a little bit, and then they bailed out of that and went in the alternate. And it's taken us a lot of time.
And a lot of staff time.
Yes, ma'am.
To process that. Okay.
Madam Chair, if I could just add one more comment. I think that particular application is not typical. Mm-hmm. And in follow-up to some of the conversation of the committee, we'd be happy to provide you a more extensive list of the size and location of reservoir applications that have gone through this alternate review process. So we can show you a map of where these have been located and give you some history since 1995 of the size and dam height that we've seen in the program, if that would be helpful.
I think that would be. I'm going to see if there are any other questions, and then I'd like to make some comments here.
Yeah, just
why don't you go ahead, and then we'll work our way that way.
Thank you. Just first of all, I want to point out that this table that's in Water Watch's written testimony, which was attributed to Water Resources Department, it's, It says calendar years 2005-2006, but I'd like to call to the committee's attention that nine of those 27 are 2004, and I don't see any from 2006, so I'm not quite sure what's in the table, and I'm not going to ask you to answer that, because if you're going to get us more information, hopefully you can.
Right. But
I also want to know, is that date the date it was the application was filed, or is that the date that the final order was issued? That would be helpful as well. Also, I'd like you to address the question where it says in the existing statute, within 180 days, you'll issue a final order granting or denying. If you deny the permit, does the applicant then have the option to go through the formal, more lengthy permitting process?
Madam Chair, Representative, if we deny it under the alternate review process, they can reapply under the regular reservoir process.
Okay. And then one last final question, Madam Chair. In your... Thank you. In your written testimony, the department did say that these additional steps take more time for the department to process and they're not covered by the additional fees, et cetera, et cetera. I think it'd be helpful if you're going to compile some additional information. I'd like to have a little more quantification on the difference between these two processes, because I think one of the things that this body and the administrative branch as well is very concerned about is trying to streamline things. I mean, there's been a lot of other processes where we do that, and I think it's important that we keep that in focus. So it'd be helpful, I think, if we had a comparison of the time and cost involved with these two alternative processes.
Thank you. That's an excellent suggestion, and especially since we know that your budget, since the two of us are reviewing that right now, has been, you know, pretty hard hit over the years. We want to make sure that your staff time is being used to the best and wisest use. Representative Jensen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious. The fees that are involved here. You indicated this 149K. Application had paid something in excess of $39,000. Is that correct? In something that they was refunded to them.
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, that's my recollection. Is that they originally paid just over $39,000 in fees.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
And what is the basis of those fees? I mean, how did that kind of a number, how did we get to that kind of a number?
Well,
help me with that a little.
Madam Chair and Representative Jensen, at the time they filed the, and this is the case today also, there is a fee paid per acre foot.
Mm-hmm.
So really large applications pay quite a bit of fee.
Okay. Follow up. A little further. I'm looking and thinking again of the workload and, you know, what the department has. I appreciate that you've gotten behind as far as staffing is concerned, and probably that is not the department's fault. That's probably some other group's fault that should, for purposes of this committee hearing, remain nameless.
It wouldn't be the legislative body, I'm sure.
I wouldn't want to use any names. Or something. There is at least some additional compensation if I apply for a reservoir permit and on this expedited process and I'm turned down, and if I reapply there is additional cost to me. I can't reapply at the same cost, can I?
Madam Chair, Representative Jensen, there are fees each time you apply, currently you don't get a credit for fees paid once before.
Follow up. I'm understanding my original fees. Once I apply and I'm rejected, my original fees are not refund. Rejection doesn't result in your refunding my original fees. Is that?
Madam Chair and Representative Jensen, that is correct.
I can go a long ways with this, and I'm going to stop.
I can tell, and I think we may have to nip this one in the bud, Representative. Actually, I think that might have been part of, well, there was some testimony here about advising their clients on which application process to go through, and that could be. But I think we will have some more discussion on this bill, regardless. Yeah. Representative Beyer?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank Representative Burley for asking for a lot of this information. I certainly think it had helped me, because as I'm sitting here listening to this, I guess I'm somewhat disappointed that Water Watch has brought this bill in but didn't really bring anything to back up the request in my mind, and that now we have to have the department bring in information to show us where this is, where there might, I don't see anything showing any problems, just telling us that there are problems out there. So hopefully I'll get a clearer picture when we get this information.
Thank you. What I'm going to ask you to do is, I think at this point, if you could, and I'm not going to form a work group, but I'm going to ask you to sit down with the folks that we heard testify today. It seems like there is some interest in at least looking at the idea of a cap, because I think we want to make sure and prevent some of the large reservoir applications from happening that would preclude full review by the department. So I would like to ask you to sit down with those parties and have a discussion and bring that information back to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we'd be happy to do that.
And then in the meantime, can you provide to the committee members the information that Representative Burley requested, either via my committee staff, and she can disseminate that?
Madam Chair, absolutely. We'll get that to the members of the committee through staff.
Okay. Thank you. Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Representative Jensen?
Could they give us the status on the material that we have here, whether the final orders or lack thereof?
Is that something you have readily available, or is that?
Just let me clarify, Madam Chair and Representative Jensen. Is it the status of the large application that we've been talking about occasionally? Or?
There are. As we've indicated, 27 of 222.
Mm-hmm.
You may not have that. It's Water Watch's last page of Water Watch's testimony.
Well, this is from their. That's taken from their data.
It came from the department, as I understand.
Oh, yeah.
If we could have the final order, pro con or whatever.
Oh, absolutely. I understand what you're talking about.
I was going to say, I think just in general, it would be helpful since this bill was passed, and it's been, 13 years, 1993, it would be helpful just to see categories, what typically, the trend, and how much of this is an anomaly or not. I know this is a two-year window. I think that would be helpful information if you can provide that to the committee members before we have further discussions. I think that would be helpful, and then maybe the status. Whether they're approved or not approved also would be helpful.
Withdrawn. Whatever.
Mm-hmm. Okay, with that, I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3467. Representative Jensen.
Madam Chair.
Okay, so do I need to open up a work session again? Is that how this works?
Sure.
Okay. I request unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow me to be recorded as voting aye on House Bill 3244 as amended by LC-2.
Okay. Representative Jensen requests unanimous consent that the rules be suspended to allow him to be recorded as voting aye on in support of House Bill 3244 as amended with the dash twos. Is there any objection?
No.
Seeing none, or hearing none, I should say. So ordered. And with that, I will, before I close, I just want to mention that, okay, you will be receiving, since we don't have committee on Friday, but since it's an in-district day, and hopefully you will be receiving via CAT the amendments to House Bill 2626, as we hope to hold a work session for that on Monday if all the amendments are available, and we will try to get those to you as expeditiously as possible. With that, I'll see everyone on Monday. Close the House Energy and Environment Committee.